Looking for a place to live can be nerve-wracking in our region. It is well documented that the vacancy rates in many of our towns are very low. There are very few vacant rental homes and apartments at any given time. And the list shrinks even further for people with pets, because not every rental will allow pets of any kind. Southern Oregon Animal Rights Society recently announced its first award to the most pet-friendly landlord in the Rogue Valley. Ashland landlord Ron Elterman got the recognition for allowing tenants to keep pets. Let's hear more about the award and the overall situation, actually from two groups. We have with us from the Southern Oregon Animal Rights Society, Janelle Davidson, who's the treasurer and a longtime member of the group. Janelle, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We also have with us Jesse Sharp, who's from a group called the Community Alliance of Tenants. He's a regional organizer for that, which just accidentally happens to spell cat as well. He's in the studio, too. Jesse, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Janelle, first time with this award?
Yes. We have a committee that decided that it would work on companion animal topics, and we thought one way to help animals find more homes and people who want to adopt find places would be to look for a landlord that would allow pets and give him some coverage, give him some accolades in hopes of encouraging other landlords to offer that as well.
And this is an organization, Southern Oregon Animal Rights Society. It's been around for a good couple of decades, hasn't it?
Yes, this is our 20th year, and we tackle a lot of issues from wildlife to companion animals and,
all kinds of things involving animal rights anyway.
Yes.
And how hard is it, Janelle, to find a rental that will accept pets in this region?
I found it really hard. I'm a renter. I only owned a condo for a short time. I bought it because I wanted to be able to have dogs. But I did have cats the whole time I was in Southern Oregon, 25 years now. And I was pretty lucky in each place that I would go to rent. I usually would go and look at the place and let the landlord look at me to see that I was a mature person and responsible and had a good job. And then when they're about ready to offer me the rental, I would say, and by the way, I have a cat. And often I usually would say right away that I would offer a special pet deposit in addition to and over and above the damage deposit, and that usually worked for me. One lady was a little hard sell. I think at that time, if I'd had a dog, she would have gone for that more likely than my two cats. But over and above the $200 damage deposit, I had to offer $800 for the pet coverage, and I was able to get the full $1,000 back when I left 3.5 years later. So I've been pretty lucky.
Your kitties were well-behaved then, it sounds like.
Yeah, they are. I'm a responsible pet owner.
Mm-hmm. So is that fairly standard, though, that if you can get a place that will rent to somebody with a pet, that that you're going to end up paying a very large deposit?
I think that has been a pretty common thing, but it's also common that the ads and the landlord will say right off the bat, no pets, and they won't even consider the other options. They won't even consider. And I do realize that landlords have had pretty bad experiences in the past of people who've left dogs for a whole weekend and never let them out, and they trash the place. Although I'm sure there's landlords who've probably had people trash a place too, and then it didn't have anything to do with pets. But it sets a bad precedent. And so landlords, just to save themselves that huge expense of remodeling and fixing the damage, just across the board say no pets.
You mentioned getting your money back in one case. Is it often the case, though, that if somebody does allow pets on the property, they'll require a large deposit that is not refundable?
I haven't seen that happen, but I wouldn't be surprised that might be the case, because sometimes they may not see the damage until the person is long gone. They might not realize that there's pet, like cat urine smell, that isn't noticeable right away, right after the person is vacuumed and shampooed. So I wouldn't be surprised if that would be the case.
Jesse Sharp, tell us a little bit about your organization, the Community Alliance of Tenants.
Yeah. So the Community Alliance of Tenants is a membership-based organization. We are essentially a tenants union. We represent renters all over the state, including hundreds here in Jackson County. We run the statewide renters' rights hotline as well. And so we receive calls from renters all over the state who have been dealing with problems with their housing, and one of those common calls is often related to people having pets as well.
But a lot of people, as we point out, are not even able to get pets into a place in the first place. I mean, and how lengthy a list is that? How prevalent is the is the not allowing of pets versus the allowing?
Well, that would be hard to answer. I did, before coming on the air today, I did do a little bit of research and was able to find one study from 2016 that said, at least nationally, that 80% of landlords were not allowing pets. That was up from the same study done in 2013 where it said 60%. So there was definitely an increase at that time. We know that these numbers get significantly higher when we're in areas with low vacancy rates where landlords can be a little more choosy about who they want to have in the apartment. So we can expect probably that those numbers could even be higher in areas like the Rogue Valley.
All right. So I was about to say, you just described our entire region as having a low vacancy rate. So this would seem like the Rogue Valley is a place where there's probably a greater prevalence then of people saying no to pets.
Yeah. And we receive a lot of calls from people who are basically having to make a decision between their pet and their housing because of the lack of available housing within their price range that allows pets.
So if they've called the renter's rights hotline to seek out help, what can you offer in those situations?
There's a lot of different options, and this is sort of where we run into a lot of the areas where different problems intersect. For any renter who has an emotional support animal, they are allowed to have that animal in their home, regardless of the landlord's policy. The same is true for anyone with a service animal. And then we also always ask renters to try to develop exactly what Janelle was describing, which is a personal relationship. We know that the relationship between landlords and tenants is by its nature a very intimate relationship. And being able to have these conversations on a really human level and being able to demonstrate that you will take care of your pet, that you're not going to have a pet that will cause damage to the apartment, can be really helpful. In Southern Oregon specifically, we have got a very large number of calls from people who have service animals or emotional support animals who are still being denied housing on that base. So a lot of it is also about making sure that renters know their rights and have the resources necessary to protect them, whether that's legal resources or just the ability to have support writing letters, which is something we do.
Animals in rentals are our topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Jesse Sharp, who's the regional organizer for the Community Alliance of Tenants, which just happens to spell out CAT. Janelle Davidson is the treasurer and a longtime member of the Southern Oregon Animal Rights Society, which recently gave an award for the most pet-friendly landlord in the Rogue Valley. You can join the conversation on the exchange because you probably have some stories of your own to share here from either end of this transaction. Either you have been trying to rent a space and got told no because of your four-legged friend, or you have been trying to rent a space to someone but didn't want to because of damage from previous pets on the property. Let's get your story here on the Jefferson Exchange and what you think ought to be done to help level the playing field here. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So we're just talking about the support and companion animals. Jesse mentioned it, and you had mentioned it earlier as well, Janelle. Are there more people who are requesting companion animals for emotional support, that sort of thing?
That's an issue that I've only become aware of in the last year or so. And I think that's a very interesting development for both for people, because we know they have better health outcomes, and children as well, when they've been around pets. So I see that as a good trend. What we're concerned about with Southern Oregon Animal Rights Society is when we see the number of adoptable animals in the 5 shelters that we have in this area. And
That's in Jackson and Josephine counties?
No, just in our Jackson.
Just
well,
in Jackson.
I guess Sanctuary 1 might mm-hmm. be outside of Jackson County. I'm not sure. They're near Rouge. Mm-hmm. But in the 5 places that I called, they all have adoptable, wonderful animals sitting there with no home. And I come across coworkers and friends and people in the community who say, I would love to adopt an animal. I would love to take in a cat or a dog. But my landlord says no. And so these animals sit there, and these people would like to have them, and they can't come together.
All right. So you got people sitting in homes without pets, and you got pets sitting in shelters without homes, and you're trying to match them up. Jesse Sharp, what kinds of things do you offer to people in terms of guidance when they're trying to convince a landlord or get a deal where a deal is not really being offered?
Yeah. I mean, it can depend on the situation. In the sort of situation that Janelle's describing, it can be really, really difficult. And there's not an easy answer when somebody doesn't already have a pet and wants to get a pet. Sometimes going, if you need that pet for emotional support, which doesn't require having a disability, it just requires having a mental health professional who says, hey, this person needs emotional support. Sometimes that can be a really good avenue to getting that pet, but that also requires having adequate access to healthcare. And we know a lot of struggling renters don't actually have that access. So there's a lot of aspects that lead into that. When someone does have a pet, oftentimes actually just trying, as we were saying before, just trying to have that conversation with potential landlords can be very helpful, whether through letters or whether through sitting down with them.
But it seems like even if the landlord is convinced, okay, I need to let this person have a pet, they can still do things like charge high deposits and things, can't they?
It depends. If it is a service animal or an emotional support animal, they can't charge us deposits, but they can withdraw afterwards. If the animal is, of course, not a medical requirement for that tenant, then, yeah, the deposits can be extremely high. And there's also a growing trend of what's called pet rent, where you actually charge an increased rent for pet owners.
Okay, so a bump up in the rent for X number of dollars per month. And what does that tend to be, do you know?
I couldn't give you a number off the top of my head. We have heard everything from $50 to $150 in the Valley.
All right, let me invite our listeners to join us once again as we talk about pets in rental units, because there are not a lot of landlords that take them. Jesse Sharp is with CAT, the Community Alliance of Tenants. Janelle Davidson is with SOARS, the Southern Oregon Animal Rights Society. You can join the conversation on the exchange and tell us a story about in a situation you have been in about trying to move into a place and discovering that you and Fido had to part ways because you needed to have that place to live and the landlord wouldn't take the dog or the cat. Or on the other hand, talk about what it's been like to have rentals and have people move in with pets and see what the aftermath might be. We'd like to hear your story at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So Janelle Davidson, was the creation of the most pet-friendly landlord award to encourage people to be landlords with allowing pets on property?
Yes, we were hoping to have a positive outlook rather than a negative unhappy story about how many don't allow, like 80% or more. But we found about four people that we looked at who said they were pet-friendly landlords, and we went with Ron Elterman, who, by the way, he does say that he has bumped up the rent a bit for pets. I didn't ask him how much. I think it was maybe about $25 to maybe to $50 a month. And he said that's an advantage. Also, he said that because there's so few landlords who allow pets, it's been he has less turnover for his apartment. He did have to do a few changes. He put in a dog door. He did some special flooring so that in case there was some urine leaks, it wouldn't go through to the pad and the floor beneath. But he said it was worth it. He's a dog-friendly person.
I read about the extent he went to, things like the flooring you were talking about. He got impermeable pads for the carpet, so nothing could actually soak into the carpet pad.
And he may have done that when he lived there himself. He moved out and rents it out now, but he used to have two dogs, and he's just feels that it's an important thing in a person's life.
So when you were setting out to give an award for the most pet-friendly landlord, did you lay out some criteria in advance for what would fit into that category?
Just amongst our small committee members, we talked about, do you know of any landlord who allows pets? And it took a little while to get even four names. And we just decided to interview them, and the first one we interviewed seemed the most pet-friendly, so we decided to give him the award.
And that was Ron Elterman.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if any of the people that you talked to were somewhat reluctant, if they were like, oh, boy, I don't know if I want to get this publicized, that sort of thing.
That's actually the case with my own landlord who has allowed pets, and she's not sure she wants to continue to allow them. She didn't go into why, so she wasn't real excited to be in the news for that because I'm sure she gets lots of phone calls because in the past she has allowed pets, and I'm lucky to have gotten in at that point.
Jesse Sharp, I've noticed some nods of recognition over there. These sound like some familiar stories to you, don't they?
Yes, definitely. Yes.
All right. So I mean, have you had a chance to work with a lot of landlords and see some of the things that they're willing to do to allow pets to get on the property?
Usually, for my position, it's pretty rare that we are working directly with the landlord. We're more advocating for people guiding themselves through the process. We do provide support, and occasionally we are having those conversations with landlords as well. We find that generally as a tenant advocacy group, when we do those calls, it can be a little less effective than when the tenants themselves advocate for themselves.
So in other words, people don't like to get phone calls from you? Is it part of what
generally I mean? Not. Yeah. We have many really good landlord allies out there who do really amazing work around this stuff and are happy to receive calls from us, but there are plenty others that don't, so we sort of hold that off until we have to.
Janelle, go ahead.
One of the things that our group has thought about checking into, and we have not done so yet, but there are foundations and grant organizations out there that many of them, they have a focus before they'll allow their grants, and some of them are very animal friendly. And we've talked about approaching some of them and asking for actual donations that we could give out to people who don't have the extra income for a large pet deposit. And it could be a loan or maybe even a grant to some people to allow them to get into a place and then adopt or else take their current animal in with them. So we're hoping that maybe we can bridge that money problem gap.
Something like a pet deposit bank in a sense.
Yes.
Again, we're talking to Janelle Davidson and Jesse Sharp about pets in rentals, which are often not welcome. We're hearing maybe 80% of rental space in the United States is off limits to pets. Tell us about your experiences on either end of the transaction. Have you tried to get into a apartment with a pet? Have you had an apartment that had a pet in it and didn't appreciate that there was a pet in it? Let's hear your version of the story at 800-838-3760 on the phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned Ron Elterman did a number of things that got him the award as the most pet-friendly landlord, and you mentioned a couple of things that he does. Did anyone else really go to the extent that he went to in terms of trying to accommodate people with pets and make some physical changes to the rental setting to make the place actually survive pets a little better?
Not of the ones that we interviewed. No, he seemed to have done the most before there was an accident rather than repairs afterwards. I would like to interview him more and find out what he might suggest we could give as ideas to future landlords that might want to be pet friendly and just aren't yet. So I think that's a good point to start from, and we can work from that.
Is the hope that in naming a pet-friendly landlord, you'll encourage other people to be pet-friendly landlords?
Yes, definitely. We want to encourage as many to be as possible. And if there's anyone who would like to donate a large sum of money or maybe a trip to Hawaii, 4 days and 3 nights to Hawaii to the best pet-friendly landlord of 2019, we'd be happy to take that in.
That was a very specific sort of request for a trip to Hawaii.
Well, or let's see, what else?
All right, but that was just an example you're
yes,
saying.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
All right, so, but at this point, did Ron Elterman get anything in the way of riches for his efforts?
He's getting, he's away on a trip right now, so when he returns, he'll get a nice printed out certificate framed for the wall and a blue ribbon like the kind they give in 4-H.
And so does, are you already looking for or looking at the criteria for or nominations for people who would be the next pet-friendly landlord for 2019?
Yes, we're excited to get this media coverage that we've gotten from this award and want to start advocating early to get people to think about who they could nominate and give us a long time to interview these people and get plenty of ideas, maybe get this funding or grant organization to get some money in hand for next year's nominations.
So let's talk about what you'd like to see down the road, which is more landlords allowing pets. And then so we've talked about the things that you're working on the landlord end of things with the Southern Oregon Animal Rights Society. What sorts of things do you advocate for tenants to do just on a regular basis or maybe try to apply pressure as an organization to try to convince more landlords, hey, you can do this. We can make it as tenants better for you.
Yeah, we It's a fairly large question, so give me a second to sort of orient myself around that. I think generally in the conversation of pets, we are really very recently starting to more in-depth look at how this happens and how we can support tenants through this situation, especially around the winter months. We've seen a rise in the amount of calls that we get about no-cause evictions. And, of course, at the end of the year, we always get drastic rent increases. And so a lot of people end up in a place where they have to move. And when people are moving, we have to figure out how to support them in finding a place and make sure that they can still keep the animal that they love and with their home, and that they can move really, really helpfully. And I think a lot of that comes down to, and I love this pet-friendly landlord concept, a lot of that does come down to really having this more positive conversation where we're making sure that we can highlight the things that both landlords and tenants can do to protect themselves. In this situation, we always, the biggest thing that we advocate for, especially for pet owners, is making sure to keep really clear documentation of their interactions with their landlords. And to try to nurture a really positive relationship even before moving in so that they can move in a way where they have that trust already laid out and where they can have an honest conversation if something does go wrong with that pet.
Which sounds like it comes back to what you were talking about earlier, Janelle, about your approach when trying to rent a place.
Right. One of the unforeseen or not very well seen problems related to people not being able to have or keep pets if they're evicted or have to move is that sometimes they get dumped. And it's a little bit harder to see the cats that get dumped who hide away in bushes. Mm-hmm. They become homeless. Some of them give birth out there, and those are usually feral cats, which are not very adoptable. And I personally have had to deal with that just since about March of last year when there was a feral cat that had kittens near where I work, and so I had to catch them myself, spay, neuter, feed,
okay,
and deal with that.
Ongoing struggle with pets and rentals. Janelle Davidson and Jesse Sharp, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.